For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast. Associate Professor Lilon Bandler is Senior Research Fellow with the Leaders in Indigenous Medical Education Network at the University of Melbourne. Dr. Talila Milroy is a GP in Perth and an Academic Registrar at the University of Western Australia. Together, Talila and Lilon have written an editorial which leads the current issue of the MJA, which, by no coincidence at all, happens to be our Indigenous health issue. Today we're going to talk about closing the gap and Medicare reform, among many other things. And welcome, thank you for doing this. You've written an editorial on closing the gap. What's different and what's better, if anything?
I guess that if you start something in 2008, it's reasonable in 2021 to have another look. If you start something in 2008 that had some headline targets that you've not met, it is reasonable to have another look. And I think that that's been done by the federal government. I guess it's also a piece of work for others to do as well and to allow reflection on what we think might be worth reconsidering.
Last year, the government went for what they called a change of direction, a change of policy direction. What did you think of that change, and has it gone in the direction you would have hoped, Talila?
The move to the changed focus onto Indigenous perspectives was a very positive one. Obviously, the government has agreed to a commitment to engaging with the Coalition of Peaks as a kind of lead body to inform those Indigenous knowledges and perspectives and integrate those into the policies going forward. I think what we outline in the article is that there has been concerns that this engagement might lead to there being a responsibility on Indigenous organisations and Indigenous people, such that if there's any failings in the policy going forward or targets not being met, that it's then the onus is no longer on the government, where we feel that the responsibility does need to remain with them.
You talk in the editorial about the importance of GPs and primary care. Why is that particularly important in terms of Indigenous health?
In general, in Australia, I think we've made, and I think it's appropriate, and clearly, you know, my biases show here, but I think it's appropriate that we've made primary healthcare the pivot, really, of our healthcare system. So if you, Kate, decide that you need to go and see a specialist, you can, but your Medicare rebate will not be the same as if I refer you as your GP to that specialist. That's appropriate because we see people. All of them. And we have similar goals to our patients in terms of their long-term healthcare. And we see the long-term goals that our patients and their families have in a way I think that an acute care hospital or a hospital delivering acute care can't have. I think that in particular, it is of importance to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander patients, because much of the impetus behind why they seek care overlaps with why we seek to provide care. And it is about long-term goals, the day-to-day care of chronic disease or multiple comorbidities. That's our bread and butter, and it is the lived experience of many of Indigenous patients.
This editorial really is written from a GP perspective because we both are practicing GPs, and so we are kind of working in and seeing gaps in this space and how we can really improve different parts of the system that we're working in to deliver on some of the kind of targets and goals.
So what are those gaps?
We talk about some of the disjoint between the primary care goals and the goals of the hospital. So as GPs, I think that our community care goals are well aligned with Indigenous perspectives on health and wellbeing. So we are trying to deliver holistic, whole of person and longitudinal care. And as Lilan said, we see people, we see communities, we see families, and that's really important with addressing healthcare over a lifetime. In terms of gaps as well, we touch on Medicare policy and yes. The organisation of general practice and the Medicare benefits scheme structure, mm-hmm. which we both think really struggles to incorporate Indigenous perspectives. So we think that it doesn't lend itself to improving the social determinants of health. The MBS items really are about making general practice profitable rather than valuing time with patients, building relationships with patients, or even spending time to listen to them, which is really essential when you're engaging with an Indigenous patient. Well, there are some item numbers specifically for Indigenous patients that already happens, but I think where general practice is lacking is we have great Aboriginal medical services and Aboriginal community controlled health organisations doing fantastic work in communities. They know their communities. They have structures in place to accommodate those communities' perspectives and culture. You know, their goals are to deliver culturally safe care. But what we argue is that it's all organisations, all general practitioners, all health professionals' responsibility to be delivering high quality care to Indigenous patients. The structures that are in, I guess we would call them your mainstream general practice services, are not set up to deliver that kind of quality care. And in that way, you limit people's choices. And a lot of care does happen in our Aboriginal medical services, but we want all Aboriginal patients to be able to receive appropriate care wherever they go.
Lilan, is there anything you want to add to that?
One of the things that draws my attention to Medicare is that it doesn't reward sitting and listening and taking time. And I think that particularly for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander patients that and their families, I think that is a real problem. They will report this sense of being hurried through and being part of a churn of the day-to-day business of a practice. But the reality is that for private practice, it is important to see a lot of patients to make it financially viable.
I'm not sure Indigenous patients are alone in that.
I think that's true, but I think it also goes to some issues around the complexity of any Aboriginal patient and Torres Strait Islander patient's healthcare. So any patient who has a complex medical history will probably identify with that, but those people are overrepresented in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander patients.
So let's talk about social determinants. Which ones are the ones that are most apparent when it comes to Indigenous health?
As we've said, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander concepts of health and wellbeing incorporate a whole of person, a whole of community, a whole of life perspective. And so, as we know, the social determinants are those non-medical factors that influence health outcomes. And the new kind of goals that were implemented with the 2020 changes in the Close the Gap policy do have a large focus on these social determinants. They're trying to target things like education and housing and criminal justice engagement. But how can we as GPs also target those things? Because we can't make referrals to someone to have stable housing, or we can't give people access to affordable groceries. but we know that these things are important, and I think GPs have known that these things are important for a long time. And I think GPs in general can be frustrated when you're trying to develop a management plan for complex diseases that really are best serviced when you're thinking about the way that that person is living and being in their day-to-day life.
I'm chatting today with Talila Milroy and Lilan Bandler about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander healthcare. Their editorial can be found online at mja.com.au, and like all our Indigenous content at the MJA, it is permanently open access. We welcome any and all feedback about our podcasts. Just drop me a line at cswannell, that's cswannell, at mja.com.au, and I guarantee you'll get a reply. Don't forget to check out Insight Plus, the weekly online news magazine of the MJA. You can find it at insightplus.mja.com.au or just Google Insight with a plus sign to find us. Back to our chat. So how do you deal with that frustration? Do you just keep plugging on, or is there a sort of GP activism that needs to start happening about getting other departments, other agencies involved in Indigenous health?
Activism or advocacy is a good role, a good word, sorry, because I think that GPs do that a lot. We are advocates for our patients, but we do hit barriers at times and limitations. So if somebody comes to me and they need a letter of support to do with accessing public housing in an emergency, we can write that. But what else can we do beyond that? It's quite difficult. Yeah. You know, we can make phone calls, we can write letters, but we're not working in a system that's conducive to setting people up for quality.
Part of the difficulty too is that it is a challenge to negotiate all of this and to navigate your way through it, whether that is for us as GPs in that advocacy role, in that willingness to write letters or you know, provide whatever support is appropriate. But it is also hugely difficult for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander patients to knit all of that together, and takes huge amounts of energy that could be better directed. So I guess part of what we've sought too is a sense that the navigation through all of this complexity is made easier rather than more difficult. And certainly, you know, my patients will say to me, you know, they're just having to fill out one more form, having to go to one more interview, having to meet one more set of criteria. All of that feel like barriers rather than things that would lubricate a path and map a path that would put together a reasonable quality of life and support them towards improving their health.
So what's the silver bullet here? What's the magic wand? This is a big question you're asking.
We touch on primary care and general practice, and we talk a bit about racism as a social determinant of health, and the kind of documented mental and physical impacts that this has on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander patients. And so you mentioned, I guess, at a government or a system level, how is this combated? And so it's quite embedded, and it also really plays into kind of facility-centred care rather than patient-centred care, which we, again, feel that general practice does very well.
I mean, we're talking systemic racism, aren't we?
Yeah.
We are talking systemic racism. And I think that is part of the challenge, isn't it, that we're asking huge things of Australia more broadly, and that is reflected in what we ask of an Australian federal government. And the stickiness and the challenge of that is for Australian society and for the Australian federal government as their representatives. I think there are some steps along the way, and I think that, you know, some of the things we've outlined are towards those steps, and I think there are steps that we would like to see happen, and they're around some of the things we mentioned around Medicare reform. And there are also the steps, I think, that the healthcare professionals in Australia are thinking about around culturally safe care and what that means and how they reflect on their own practice and what that means in terms of how they might change their practice. And how they might reflect on their values and their impact on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander patients. I think that it is a recognition of how difficult this is, that we also recognise that it's not just about policy, it is about people, and it is about how people live and how people interact with their healthcare professionals. And I think that it is complex and difficult, and I have no expectation that it will be solved in a moment. I think, you know, in many ways, I remember when Closing the Gap came along and said, we will close the gap in a generation. And like most people, I would have hoped that that would be the case, but I've always thought that it was optimistic because we are seeking such fundamental changes.
Seeing the two of you today, do you see that similar hope in Talila's generation of Indigenous health workers and GPs coming through?
Yes, I do. And I think that medical education has changed. And I think, I mean, it's decades since I did my medical degree, and much of a medical degree is the same as it was then. But one of the biggest changes has been the shift around Indigenous health education. Having said that, in the milieu of healthcare practice, I think it is a risk that we burn out our younger colleagues. And so I certainly see it as my duty and my responsibility to support them in their push for change.
I think I agree with Lilon in terms of the change in medical education. So you have, I regularly hear it that doctors that are older than me, that they were not exposed to, you know, concepts of Indigenous health and wellbeing or the issues in Indigenous health that need to be addressed. And so we're seeing a new generation of trainees that are exposed to that from the beginning of medical school, throughout medical school and into their training. And certainly general practice training does have specific times to focus on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health. And so that is important, and that will be a source for change, because we know that organisational approaches and commitments are important with promoting long-term positive change.
And actually ask you, Talila, to just think about how you might make reference to some of the work you've done, really looking at the experience of younger trainees and the disconnect between younger doctors, including Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander doctors, and their supervisors, and how that actually plays out is hugely problematic and is something that, you know, both here and in New Zealand we're having to think about and having to grapple with.
I think what Lilon is talking about in terms of burnout and the kind of younger generation of doctors, I think in particular you're referencing kind of the younger Indigenous doctors who are kind of coming through. So we know that one of the national strategies has been that we have an increase in the Indigenous health workforce to help promote culturally safe workplaces, and we know that Indigenous doctors relate really well with Indigenous patients. But it's been hard to grow this sector. We have streamlined pathways for Indigenous people to move into medical and health-related fields through universities, but there are barriers, it would seem, to people progressing after they graduate into specialty training, and racism is thought to be a big contributor to that. It is, in terms of the disconnect, I think it's talking about supervisors who may not be aware of the issues that their Indigenous trainees might be experiencing with their training. And this might include things like racism directed from patients, so day-to-day practice and how they deal with that, who do they debrief with that, and also access to culturally appropriate mentorship, which some colleges are trying to improve. But if there's not a lot of people to provide that mentorship at the top, then you have difficulties when you've got a lot of trainees that also need that support. But I think that what we're trying to say as well is that it's not just the sole responsibility of your Indigenous or your minority trainees to kind of address these issues. So again, it's about system change. We needing to address the issues of racism across healthcare education, training and healthcare delivery to support trainees and to support these culturally safe workplaces.
Is the best way to do that to just keep talking about it? Just keep making it visible?
Visibility is increasing. We're seeing that recognition of systemic racism more and more. But as with a lot of health policy over time, we know that simple awareness is not enough. You know, you can't just be aware of something. We have moved beyond things like cultural competence, which is ticking a box or attending a training course. We know that that's not enough. And so that's why we're moving to cultural safety and we're moving to people having a consciousness of their own biases and their own ways that they practice or engage in racism.
Sum it up for me, Lilon. What would you like to see come out of this discussion and your editorial?
I'll take that first question, the second question first, and say I guess what I would see come out of the editorial is a conversation about Medicare reform and a conversation about recognising the place of primary healthcare providers, including GPs, in Indigenous health improvement. And recognising the place for rethinking what's important in a consultation. I guess the only other thing that we probably haven't acknowledged is that there are a lot of people working in the space and that this is just one part of a much bigger conversation. And, you know, we make no, we have no illusions that we are in the business of solving everything, but we would like this voice heard as well.
Thank you both for your time. Oh, I really appreciate it.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.